It is Tuesday. It is time for book picks on our list from our independent bookseller of the week, Mike Hare of Northshire Bookstore in Saratoga Springs. They also have a store in Manchester, Vermont. They join us this morning to present some of the finest authors and books that are making their way to store shelves this season. Mike Hare, good morning. How are you, sir?
Good morning, Joe. Always wonderful to be here and to see you here.
Always great to have you on the program. Where would you like to begin, sir?
We'll start with The Traveling Cat Chronicles. It came out a few years ago in Japan, translated to English by Philip Gabriel late last year, right in time for the Christmas season. And it's a very unusual tale. It's told in part by a very acerbic cat. He's the narrator of about half the book, and the other is sort of a third-person narrator. And the cat is taken up by a man in Japan after the stray cat. He's a stray, and he breaks his leg because he's hit by a car in the road. He doesn't really know what to do, and he was being fed by this guy. So he goes to the guy's van in a parking lot in the apartment where the food was waiting for him underneath the van. The van takes pity on the cat, takes him in. And the story kind of goes from there. And it's a very engaging story because you've got the nature of the cat. People that know and love cats know that they have attitudes. And this cat definitely has an attitude. And he is basically taken in by this individual, the man who is the apartment owner. He's got to move. He's got to leave the apartment because they don't allow cats there. And then he embarks on a journey through some towns in Japan to see old friends. And that's where the story gets its title, The Traveling Cat Chronicles. And the purpose of the story becomes very clear. It's a very moving story emotionally and also physically because they're traveling through Japan. So it's sort of a traditional travelogue as far as that goes. So you have the emotion of the story sort of juxtaposed with the very sort of nasty, acerbic nature of the cat. And the dichotomy works very, very well. And it's a very popular book. It's done very well in this country. Again, it came out in Japan a few years ago. The author is Hiro Arakawa, and it's called The Traveling Cat Chronicles.
All right. Next up, I think a book by one of my favorite authors.
Jared Diamond?
Yes.
Upheaval. Wonderful book. Brand new. Guns, Germs, and Steel came out.
Fantastic.
This is magnificent. He is an extraordinarily intelligent man, historian. I guess he can be defined as a sociologist. And what he does in this book, Joe, and he does it very effectively, is that he looks at countries that have been in a state of upheaval, in a state of huge crisis, and how do they deal with it? Did they deal with it well? Did they deal with it poorly? Some of the examples include Finland before and during World War II. And unless you're Finnish or have a particular interest, probably an awful lot of people don't think about Finland during World War II, but what Finland did is that they somehow resisted the Soviet threat from one side and also the German threat from the other, one from the west, one from the east, and they remained an independent country. How did they do that? And he goes into detail in terms of how they succeeded in remaining independent. Another country he details is Chile in the 1970s. Allende was the socialist, democratically elected president. He was overthrown in a military coup, and Pinochet, the military dictator, took over, and Chile went through some horrific totalitarian experiences for about 15 or 20 years after that. So it's sort of the opposite of what happened in Finland. He also talks about Japan in two periods in history. First, in the mid-19th century, after Commodore Perry visited and sort of opened up Japan to the West. He also talks about Japan after World War II. So what he does, he talks about countries having a realistic attitude about what's happening, the need to compromise. What do you compromise? What don't you compromise? But as you know, Joe, Diamond is a very resourceful writer. He's also a very clear writer. His degree of expertise is vast. But his communication skills are wonderful because he makes these stories come to life in terms of what these countries are doing. Of course, the subplot of all this is what's happening in the U.S. today and what can America do to make things better, or perhaps what decisions need to be made in this country. But he sets out guidelines in terms of what a country like Finland did on the positive side and what a country like Chile did when things sort of all went rapidly downhill in the mid-1970s.
He's one of those authors that you read and you follow every word, and then suddenly you look back and you say, wow, I now know about this, which I had no...
Yeah,
I had no thought that I could even have the capacity to learn this.
Because the clarity, it's true. Yes, absolutely true. Because the clarity of his thought is amazing, and the way he communicates is amazing. I mean, you can be a layperson, you can be someone who knows a lot about American history, you could be a historian or sociologist, I'm sure, and still appreciate what he's saying because he makes it, you know, he makes it real. He makes it like, okay, these are things that have happened. Why did they happen? How did they happen? How do you prevent bad things from happening again?
Upheaval by Jared Diamond. Next up.
Wild at Home by Hilton Carter. This is a book about houseplants, and it's such an engaging book. It's a beautifully photographed book. Hilton Carter has sort of made a career for himself in organizing and decorating people's homes, not with furniture or not with paint, but with houseplants. They're living, breathing works of art with him. The book is beautifully photographed. He talks about purchasing, potting, pruning, positioning, propagating plants, fertilizing, watering, and his love and passion for houseplants is just infectious. It's a magnificent book. It's sort of a coffee table book, not quite that size, but pretty close. So anyone that wants to put an African violet in their house or a snake plant or decide what to do with the sort of the larger plants that are around, how to put them in the place in the home to make them in the most agreeable manner, in the most artful, tasteful manner, and also, of course, the health aspects of the plants as well are very important. But it's something, it's a quick book, too. You can read it very quickly. It's a hardcover, roughly $20 purchase, but Wild at Home is wonderful for anyone that has, not even a green thumb. You might have a green thumb after you read the book.
Nothing wrong with that. What's the worst that can happen? Wild at Home by Hilton Carter. Next.
The Impeachers by Brenda Wineapple. And this is can be seen as a pertinent book today. Andrew Johnson became president after the assassination of Abraham Lincoln in 1865. And when he became president, the Congress was not in session. So he was able to pretty much have a free hand in terms of his policies. Andrew Johnson was a unionist during the Civil War. He was sort of the acting governor of Tennessee. Even though Tennessee seceded, he was still loyal to the Union. Lincoln recognized that and named him as vice president. Lincoln, of course, was the founder of the Republican Party. Andrew Johnson was a Democrat. But Andrew Johnson was nothing like Lincoln would have been. He was very mulish. He was very pig-headed. He had emotional difficulties, perhaps. He did not enjoy being criticized at all. He a bit of a drunkard, all kinds of situations going on inside his head that made it very difficult for him to govern. And he was impeached in 1868. And the book details the reasons for the impeachment. He was very cordial to the former Confederates. He was not at all cordial to the former slaves in the South or in the North as well. So Andrew Johnson made a lot of enemies during his time in office. And of course, you can draw parallels to what's happening today in a lot of people's minds in terms of the presidency, because Andrew Johnson's characteristics may be somewhat similar to what we're seeing today in some people's eyes. Andrew Johnson was actually impeached in 1868, and then the impeachment happens in the House, then it went to the Senate. He was acquitted by a single vote. It takes a two-thirds majority. He was acquitted 35 to 18, so 35 senators wanted to convict him. It needed 36, so he was rescued by one vote, or else he would have been impeached. It's interesting, too, Joe, that this happened in 1868, the year of the presidential election that year. Right. He was not nominated for presidency, so he wouldn't have served another term, but he barely survived impeachment. Very well researched, sort of a black hole in American history, too, because there's so much about Lincoln, quite a bit about Reconstruction. But this particular era and this particular president, not as well researched as possible, and Brenda Wineapple does a wonderful job filling that gap.
Amazing. It is Brenda Wineapple and the Impeachers. We have probably time for two more books. I know you have three, so which two would you like to pick?
Let's do first, which is by Evan Thomas. First is Sandra Day O'Connor. She was the first female Supreme Court justice in the country, appointed by Ronald Reagan in 1981. Reagan, when he ran against Carter in 1980, promised that he would nominate a woman to the Supreme Court. He did. Sandra Day O'Connor was confirmed fairly easily, and it's about her tenure on the Supreme Court. And she was a moderate. She was sort of a conservative with a small C when she became a Supreme Court justice, sort of drifted a little bit to the, or moved a little bit toward the center, and was the most powerful woman in the country for many years because she basically sat in the middle of the Supreme Court. There was a guest on a few minutes ago on your program who commented that Sandra Day O'Connor was the last politician to serve on the Supreme Court, and she was. She was an elected politician in Arizona. No one there on the Supreme Court today has served in a political office as well. But she actually used that effectively because she was able to sort of negotiate between the left and the right, and her jurisprudence was very focused on the cases. Anthony Kennedy became the swing justice after O'Connor left, and Kennedy was much more grandiose in his opinions and his jurisprudence, where O'Connor was much more focused on individual cases. And the book details her career, her post-court experience. She regretted leaving as soon as she did. She was not happy with Samuel Alito's decisions, who succeeded her on the court. So first by Evan Thomas. Thomas is a well-known historian and also deals with Rehnquist, William Rehnquist and Sandra Day O'Connor. They were classmates in Stanford. They had a romantic attachment for a brief period of time, and then they both ended up on the U.S. Supreme Court years later. But it's a fascinating study of both O'Connor and also the workings of the U.S. Supreme Court.
Wow, good stuff. Let us end with an oldie but a goodie.
Ulysses by James Joyce. This isn't new, Joe. It was written in published in 1922. James Joyce is the quintessential 20th century American author in many people's minds, and its stream of consciousness was not created by Joyce, but he basically is the person who got it out to the public. The book was banned for many years. It was thought to be obscene. It's 783 pages, the copy I have, so it's a very dense book, and parts of it are difficult, but parts are very readable. And the main character is an individual named Leopold Bloom, and he is a newspaper canvasser in Dublin. The book is set on a single day, June 16th, 1904. It's one day in the life of Leopold Bloom and other individuals on that day. And it's known as Bloom's Day in literary circles. And what happens on Bloom's Day is in Dublin and throughout the world in many cities, the day is celebrated by the reading of Ulysses by James Joyce. Certainly not the entire book because it would take days to read. It's so big. But excerpts of the book. And we're very happy at Northshire in Saratoga Springs to be celebrating Bloom's Day with our own Bloom's Day celebration, which is coming up on a Sunday. June 16th falls on a Sunday this year. So on that day from 2 to 5 in the back of the store, which is located at 424 Broadway, in Saratoga Springs. Myself and some of my colleagues at the bookstore, some Skidmore folks, members of the community, will be reading excerpts from Ulysses. It's kind of an intimidating book because it is so big and it kind of puts people off because it is very challenging and parts are very difficult, but parts are very, very funny. Parts are very off color. Parts are very kind of randy and sexual. And it's a magnificent play of language. James Joyce had a brilliant, brilliant writer with all these different styles that he experimented with in the composition of Ulysses. He started in 1914. He finished it in 1921. It was published on its 22nd birthday in 1922. So it's not a new book, but we're encouraging people from the community, from the public, just to stop in and listen and maybe learn something about what this piece of literature is all about and gain appreciation for a phenomenal work of literature, Ulysses by James Joyce.
You cannot take the broadcaster out of the bookseller. You hit your post perfect. On the nosy there, buddy.
Timing's everything.
It is indeed. For more information on Northshire Bookstore and the great work they do, you can visit their website, northshire.com. Visit them in Manchester and Saratoga. Northshire.com all to find out about this wonderful event as well. Mike Harris, always great to see you. Thank
great
you
to
so
see
much.
You, Joe.
Be
see you
well.
Soon. Thank you.
Again, you can find out more on our website, wamc.org/bookpicks or northshire.com. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.